Into the Blender, episode 52.
You're listening to Into the Blender with your hosts, Chooch and Viv.
You can hear us discussing topics ranging from co-parenting a blended family to gaming to media reviews.
Or whatever shiny object catches our eye that day. Your heart's beating for me. I'm just waiting to see. Where's the line that you would draw
behind me and never let me be? Hey everybody, just a quick note. This is actually part two of three for our PG Holyfield media review extravaganza. In this part, we're going to discuss movies, books, and music. And part three is all about television. Without further ado, we will join our program already in progress.
So we're going to move on to books now, and having our little thing that we do, and I don't know if you know this, PG, one thing that Chooch and I have restarted recently is reading books to each other that we really enjoy.
Yes, I'm sure last time we were talking about doing that.
Yeah, so we started doing that, and since the first one we did, I picked, was Cyrano de Bergerac, because I felt it was criminal that Chooch had never read the play, because it's just my favorite, probably book of all time. It was Chooch's turn, and he picked Ender's Game.
Oh, yes.
By Scott Orson Card.
Orson Scott Card.
I got the three names right.
Yeah, you got them all in there.
Just mixed up. And so, you know, I'm sure that a good majority of our listeners have already read the story, but why don't you give a synopsis of it? Because you know it way better than I do. I just have read it the one time with you.
Yeah. It's a story that follows a young child.
Very young child.
In the future. Mm-hmm. As he is, well, in this world, it's a world at war, so there's an alien species that we had a altercations with that they call the buggers. Mm-hmm. And we're preparing for when they come again.
Right.
Because through, you know, space travel takes a long time to get, you know, everywhere or whatever. So
yeah.
The initial bugger invasion had been quite a long time past, you know, decades. And so the government is training children from a very young age. They kind of selectively choose the children that have the correct attributes that they're looking for to fight.
And to lead, really.
And to lead, right.
They're looking for the perfect leader.
Yeah. And so young Andrew Wiggin, or Ender as they call him, it follows him as he is chosen to go to the battle school and go on an accelerated path.
Because he is so...
So gifted.
So gifted in this realm.
Yeah. And I, at first, didn't know if you would do well with this book at all, because you've got, you know, real soft spot and
I'm squishy.
And when it comes to kids and stuff,
to bugs.
Bugs too. But when it comes to kids and kids going through bad things, yes, you know, you get very squeamish.
I cry.
And this kid is punished. I mean, it's brutal what he goes through. Mentally and physically.
What he's intentionally put through. What he's systematically put through.
But there's such a payoff that I figured, you know, you would fall in love with it if you could make it through some of the bad things that happened to him.
I fell in love with it in the first chapter as I was crying.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we didn't make it past the first chapter before I'm in tears over Ender and Valentine and the plight.
Why are you doing this to me?
Yeah, I did. Why did you do this?
It's worth it.
And I, by then, I was already in love with Ender and Valentine. How can you not be?
Valentine's his sister.
Yeah, his sister Valentine. Oh my, because their life is really nasty before he even gets sucked into this program because of their older brother, primarily because of their older brother. And it's just, it is an achingly beautiful story as you see this child go through a few years of development, and it kind of, it tells you what his future is beyond his childhood, but it kind of just gives you like bullet points. This happened and this happened and this happened. And it is just such a rich and beautiful story. And then after reading it, when I was writing a blog post about it, And I read up about, you know, I knew that there were sequels. You had told mm-hmm. me which ones were your favorite and whatever. But reading the Wikipedia and all this other information, that originally it was a short, "Hi, Kaylee, I will put the pen down because you are really fascinated." You know, that first it started out as a short story. Yes. And then he wrote the novel. And then he rewrote the novel like mm-hmm. 8 or 10 years later. Since then, it's actually become sort of a textbook. Yeah. Used by the Marines that they require the soldiers to read as far as, you know, military strategy and stuff like that, which I thought was really fascinating. Yeah. It's a classroom, like a student, like a, you know, an elementary, maybe not elementary, maybe middle school textbook. Mm-hmm. They, you know, assign it to kids to read. And I'm not surprised at all because it's just that one book is just that good. It's the only one that we've read that I've read in the series. Mm-hmm. And the sequel that I'm most excited to read is, and I can't remember the name of it, but there's another character, another young child named Bean.
Ender's Shadow.
Ender's Shadow, that's what it is. This other child named Bean that comes up after Ender, and it tells the entire story from Bean's perspective.
Yeah, retells the story, goes back and
retells
from his perspective, yeah.
And I loved Bean so much, I can't wait to read that. Also, that's...
And he's, yeah.
He's in a similar boat. Yeah. And Ender puts him through some of it.
Yeah. But I mean, before he even gets to the school, there's, he's got a rough time.
Yeah. So, I mean, I obviously love the book. I blogged about it. I went and started gathering the copies and luckily found another box of your books from, you know, before we were together. And mm-hmm. you've got like 3 or 4 of the sequels in there, including Ender's Shadow. So that's on mm-hmm. my nightstand on my growing stack of books to read. So how about you, PG?
I mean, I read it first when I might have been a freshman in college. I can't remember exactly when I first read it. I mean, it was one of the books that made me want to be a writer. I mean, it is one of my favorite books.
Yeah. And I first read it at 12 or 13.
Yeah, I mean, Orson Scott Card was the first author I ever went to meet when I was living in D.C. He came for a book signing. His collection of short stories, which has the original Ender's Game, the short story, it's called Maps in a Mirror, and it's probably got 30 stories in it or something. I mean, it's a honkin' big book, and it's wonderful. Mm. You should get that, and you can, read pieces, because he's one of my favorite writers. Some of his political views, not so much, but
he's also,
you can separate that.
Yeah.
I know he's also into alternate histories. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. he's written a few books that are kind of, you know, what if this would have happened instead of that? And then how would that affect society and everything?
Right. Yeah. Out of Ender's World.
No, in general. He's got one about Christopher Columbus.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's outside of Ender's World.
Yes, I thought you meant like coming out of Ender's, like, never mind. Never mind.
Did you read?
I haven't read any of his alternate. And I know
I read the Christopher Columbus. It's called, it has Christopher Columbus in the title. I can't remember, but it's actually a time travel story, where, it's in the future. There is a group or something that they basically go back in history to see what really happened and all these things. So like they go back to when Jesus died and, watch, but then of course, you know, they have rules about not doing anything.
Sure.
Not getting involved. But yeah.
Prime directive.
Yeah. But they, you know, obviously it wouldn't be much of a story if they didn't break that rule.
Yeah.
So,
nobody ever sticks to it.
And I can't recall the whole plot, but it has to do with one of the scientists or whatever, they're affected by the idea of, I believe, and I could be forgetting this, it's been 15 years since I read it, 20 years, but the idea that Christopher Columbus brought all this disease and mm-hmm. you know, to the new world and destroyed all these civilizations, all this stuff. And so one of the scientists decide they need to, you know, change some things or, you know, see what, you know, and so they're trying to stop this person. And so it's mm-hmm. One of the better time travel stories, I think.
Cool.
So it's a good read.
So and check
I don't
out.
Know if and it's, they are doing, they're at least we're in pre-production for Ender's Game as a movie. So.
Yeah.
And it's one of those, you know, you always think, it's one of those books where you're like, God, it would be such a great movie. But until now, it really wouldn't have been a good movie, because of the, you know, being able to pull off the special effects and what have you, but just the being able to have a child that could play a part. I mean, they're going to have to change the story anyway because it's a time lapse. You know, you got a kid that's going to be, you know, I forget how many years Ender goes through in his training and getting ready for what happens later in the book. But, you know, being able to pull that off in a movie, it would be difficult. But I think now it's the right time to do it. Yeah. So hopefully it'll be good.
Yeah. And I've heard that they've had a lot of false starts, but the holdup has always been having a child actor that could emotionally pull it off, the depth of Ender.
And I remember that when Haley Joel Osment came out,
he could have.
He started there. That was like as soon as he did Sixth Sense. I heard, you know, all the boards are like, totally wait, he can do it. He can do it.
Now,
of course, he's too old. But
but
you know, I think that there are actors that could probably pull it off now. That so we'll see.
He really, I mean, because having just rewatched Sixth Sense and being hit again, because I had forgotten just how powerful that kid's performance was in that movie. You know, he's kind of, he's obviously slipped off the acting radar since then. But even if that's the only, like, great role of his life, holy crap. What a great job he did. And then the other one that I put on the list is... it's a series by Scott Westerfield. The first book is called The Uglies, and it's actually a book that J.R. Blackwell had recommended to me, and then our friend Andrea, who is Thomas Gideon's wife, Command Line's wife, had also said she enjoyed. So, you know, I snatched it up from the library, and it's three books in the series, and so Uglies is the first one, and I just loved it. Initially, it was very much, it's a young adult novel, and the premise is that everybody is born considered to be ugly. You know, this is in the future, and it's after society has basically imploded because of all the damage that we did to the planet and all that kind of stuff. So the premise is that everyone's an ugly until they turn, I think the magic age is 16, and then you have a surgery. They basically put you under the knife, and they modify you so that everyone is a pretty, and there's like this kind of basic blueprint that has to be followed. It's a government thing. It's not like, oh, I'm going to go get pretty, maybe. Everybody has to do it. The only way to not do it is to literally leave the society, which is one of the things that happens in the book. And so it changes your skin. It changes your bone structure. They have, I forget what they call it, but there's these pills. I'm on the second book now called The Pretties. And there's a pill that's a calorie purger, so you can't get fat. You can go and surge, which is going and having more surgeries to modify and make yourself more bubbly, is one of the things that they call, you know, being beautiful. And not necessarily just cleavage. Chooch made the breastage symbol for boobs. But it is a really good first book, enough so that I was very irritated when all of the local library copies were all checked out and the second book, and I had to wait several weeks to get it. I'm really enjoying that. I really recommend it for girls. For, you know, it's a young adult book. I really recommend it for girls. I'm going to get a copy for my best friend's girls.
So does it ultimately, you know, have really good messages about body image?
Yes. I you know, it's questionable in the beginning because literally they're called uglies. You go from being a littly to an ugly to a pretty. And then you've got different life stages, like a young pretty, which is like the later, you know, the initial crop of teens, early 20s, and then middle pretties, and then older pretties. And throughout your life, you just go in and you have upkeep done. And it's, if they have kind of scrubbed the earth of books, images, magazines of life before. And so everybody thinks that everybody was ugly, and, you know, they actually cut down trees, and it's all very shocking and offensive, and they've made it like a very tiny carbon footprint kind of existence in this new world, and this is part of it. Part of the premise explains that the reason for all the war and the reason for all this self-destructive behavior in humanity was because there were ugly pretty and because there were ugly people and there were beautiful people. So therefore all of these problems existed. That's their reasoning for doing it. Gotcha. And you kind of, by the end of the uglies, you get in, you kind of get to see the kind of, you know, what's going on behind that, who's running all of this stuff and making all these things happen and keeping things in order. And it's really interesting. I don't know how interesting guys would find it. I love the fact that it was written by a guy. He's got a really good ability to write for women. Because that was one of the things I asked Cher when she was telling me about. I was like, well, how well does he write for a female? And she's absolutely right in saying he does a really good job with it. So again, it's something, it's targeted towards young women. I'm 41 and I'm enjoying the hell out of it. And I'm about halfway through the second book and can't wait to read the third. When I was waiting for the second book, he has another book called So Yesterday, which is also a really good story, not nearly as good as The Uglies, but it's also a good story that I would recommend. Again, young adult novel, so.
That's not related to the other.
It's a totally different world.
Series.
Yeah, totally different world. Very interesting, though, dealing with fads and trends and marketing and that kind of thing. Any other books you guys want to talk about? Print books?
Well, in our reading series, we've finally started. Well, I've finally started Game of Thrones.
About time.
You know, yes. I had to, PG.
Well, that was what, you know, when I was here for BlenderCon, you were discussing that the next book should be that. And I was like, yes, it needs to be that.
Yeah.
I was torn because I very selfishly also want to read For the Win, which is Cory Doctorow's new book, which was based on Anda's Game, which was a short story podcast. It was one of, I can't remember if I heard Seventh Son by J.C. Hutchins first or Anda's Game by Cory Doctorow, which was read by his wife, Alice, which, I mean, I have such a crush on his wife. I don't remember. I saw her on a video clip one time. I have no idea what she looks like, but her reading of that short story just blew me away. Fantastic. It's another one that would be a great young adult kind of way to introduce girls into it.
Yes.
It's girl in the gaming world and her experiences, and it kind of goes into some interesting political and economic realms. But so I was like, okay, it should be Game of Thrones because he really freaking needs to, he needs to know this world, especially since the HBO series is going to be coming out soon.
Yeah.
But, you know, I finally sacrificed time to read For the Win so that you could finally drag your ass into the Seven Kingdoms. So what are you thinking of it so far?
I'm really enjoying it so far. Yeah. We're not terribly far into it.
We're a little past the third way, third of the way through, I think.
But yeah, I mean, there's already, you know, tons of growing intrigue and layers and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was one point where I ended the chapter and you were like, holy crap. Wow. And I think it was Bran when he gets pushed.
Ah, yes.
It was like, whoa. And also the scene where his mom defends him from the assassin.
Yeah.
Yes, they are at, you know, Ned and the girls have gotten to the castle and they've been there for a little while and things are getting interesting. But one of the biggest turning point story mechanisms has not happened yet.
Yes. That we won't talk about.
But I can't wait to see Juju's face when that happens. It's huge. It is totally game changing, world changing. It's fantastic. And I'm loving reading it again. It's my third or fourth time reading it. I just reread the series over the last 2 years, and so I'm reading it again.
And you can probably read it again before the next book comes out.
It's entirely possible. Any other books? You love Game of Thrones. We've talked about this.
Yes, I mean, that's my favorite fantasy series.
We're both obsessed with it, yeah.
It's wonderful, but spent way too much money on games related to the to the series, which we played at one at BlenderCon.
Which I'm very grateful that you've done that.
Yeah, so you don't have to buy them. So.
Well, I don't have to buy them untried.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of interest in going into the RPG that they've done for the book series.
Yes. And we can't wait for the miniseries because they've got really good, really good people playing Hearts, so.
Sean Bean playing Ned Stark. Mm-hmm. And the beautiful casting of Tyrion.
Yeah.
I'm forgetting the actor. Peter Dinklage.
Yeah.
Who was, well, most people would probably recognize him as the angry elf from the movie Elf. So that, yeah, the series, I was initially pissed that they were going to make it. Got kind of excited when it was HBO. Absolutely all in. Can't wait to see it when I found out that they cast Peter Dinklage. That was it. Yeah. That's when I said, they get it. They really get it.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
So your all-time favorite fantasy series is Game of Thrones. Well, Song of Ice and Fire.
Yes. It would have to be that. Used to be Chronicles of Thomas Covenant by Stephen R. Donaldson. Mm-hmm. But definitely. Of course, Lord of the Rings is, you know, up there. But
yeah,
that's just different.
Well, yeah,
it's
own that's
thing. Different category. It's not,
that's like saying the Bible, you know, is an epic story. Yeah, an epic tale. And I've recently actually listened to the audiobook. I never read Lord of the Rings until this year, thanks to some friends. Thanks to MA and PA, who actually let me borrow her audio.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I loved it. And it was, of course...
Is it one of the play, not play version, but like the BBC where they had all the voices and
stuff? It's a straight read. It's a fantastic straight read. I can't remember the reader's name.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
But it was a fantastic read.
The British guy and just great voice characterization, you know.
Fantastic. And a great singing voice because there's so many songs in the trilogy. And he just belted them out beautifully. It was a fantastic read. I'll have to get the name of it and maybe put it in the show notes, the name of the reader, so that people know which version it was, because I know there's several. But absolutely loved it. Of course, having seen the movies, and you know that it's this rich fantasy landscape, and the characterization is amazing and rich, and you fall in love with the characters. But, you know, as much, and I've said before, how much I just love, 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 love Samwise. Mm-hmm. I think he is one of the all-time great heroes of literature.
Oh, yeah.
And then hearing the books... Oh, my God. The movies didn't give him, like, half of the credit that the books... You know what I mean? They didn't, like, portray him half as richly as I... You couldn't have. The movies did a beautiful job.
Yeah.
But he's just even more heroic, and I heart him even more.
Yeah. I think my favorite fantasy series... For a long time, my favorite fantasy series was The Belgariad by David Eddings. Mm-hmm.
I haven't, of course, read that.
But then I had started reading Terry Goodkind's Sword of Truth series. Mm-hmm. And I think that may still be my favorite. Although I never made it through the whole thing because, you know, they're a million pages each. And there's like 12 of them or something already. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on. But the first three or four I had read, I really loved. And then they started the television series, Legend of the Seeker. Which was I really enjoyed, which only went two seasons and got canceled, but
but it was a really good series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think
they did it really well. They made a lot of changes, but
you have to.
But I think they did a pretty good job. But that and the novels to me is still my favorite bad guy, Darkin Rahl. He is so evil. I've never read anybody since that is as evil as he is.
Wow.
I mean, he would take months and months and months, like kidnap a child and have people beat the crap out of them day and night. And he would be the only person that showed them any kind of kindness. He would make them fall in love with him. Because to do like this kind of ethereal travel from one place to another, he would look into their eyes and like use their soul to travel from one place to another. And if they didn't absolutely love him, with every fiber of their being, he could be lost forever. So they had to completely love him. So he spent months torturing, having other people torture these children so they'd fall in love with them. And then him doing this traveling would put them through agony and kill them.
Wow.
That's evil.
That's that is evil. Wow. Yeah.
Fun times.
Perky, perky, perky.
But it has the balance, too. You've got the epic hero and love story and stuff that balances that evil that, you know, they're working to defeat him.
Yeah. Torturing children is a common theme. Oh, and that was one thing that I, when we were reading Ender's Game.
Oh, yeah.
His, you know, and this is going back to what we were talking about earlier, but his sister being named Valentine at the end of that first chapter, and it's, you know, Ender and Valentine kind of against the world, and I was crying, and I was like, I'm so glad Kaylee's middle name is Valentine. It's so perfect. Yeah, I'm a fool. Actually, it's her last name. It's not her middle name. Kaylee Sue Valentine. From Susie the Banshees, not like Mary Sue or Peggy Sue.
Why is it that you persist in saving the humans, Elena? Is it love? Is it nostalgia for what we once were? What purpose could you possibly have that could not be better served by a heart of gears and steam?
Jonathan Andrews thought that his life was turned upside down when he joined a secret society of wizards, but he had no idea what was in store for him. Join Jonathan and the others as they delve through the mystery that threatens all life on the planet. Listen to the free podcast at thegearheart.com.
And next, moving into the next media realm, which, hey, we're making progress. We were actually here now with only this much left, is movies.
And we should just skip everything. Just talk about Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim. Well, I want to talk about watching really 100 movies. We're doing this Watch 100 Movies, the AFI Top 100 Movies. We're following along with Christiana Ellis, which I think we've mentioned on here before.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And I wanted to ask Chooch, we've just watched number 85. Mm-hmm. Friday night with PG, we watched Night at the Opera, which is Marx Brothers from 1935, I think. Yeah, because it was 1980. It was number 85, 1935. That's why I remember it.
Mm.
So of the movies we've watched so far, what has been your hands down number one that you would put in the number one highest slot right now of the 15 weeks?
Well, I happen to have a spreadsheet.
Good, because I didn't write mine down. I meant to find research. I meant to look and see what mine is.
Well, what I did when we kind of started watching these is I made a spreadsheet, exported everything, you know, that was on the AFI list.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried to do a prediction of, after I watch all these, what do I think are going to be my favorites?
Mm-hmm.
And so I ordered them. And then I have, you know, the as we go.
Yeah.
We watch one or two, and then I go through and I re-rank.
Yeah, which I keep forgetting to do. I've actually been promising on my blog for the last 10 movies to post what our rating so far is.
So, like, my five favorites so far. My number one favorite's still Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
Followed by, which is something that surprised me, 12 Angry Men.
Oh, yeah.
And then Goodfellas, Do the Right Thing, and Toy Story. That's my top five.
Well, I can tell you that mine would be a close, but still Blade Runner would be at the top of that group of 15 that you're talking about, or 16 movies. So, but Pulp Fiction definitely up there. The first Toy Story movie was of course excellent.
My number one, I'd have to put more thought into it than this, but as far as just kicking my ass, like getting really in me, mm-hmm. even really drawing a strong reaction from me, Sophie's Choice.
Mm.
Oh, Sixth Sense.
Mm-hmm.
Was pretty mind-blowing. I would not have said this before listening to Mike and Christiana's discussion of Do the Right Thing, but I would even add Do the Right Thing pretty high up my list, higher than I would have predicted it. Because I'd already seen it, and listening to their discussion prompted me to send in a really overly long audio comment to them.
Yeah.
That made me pay a lot more attention to the movie. I actually watched it a second time after I watched it and listened to them. And I was like, shenanigans on some of their points because I didn't agree with them. Not because, well, there was one thing that they were wrong about, but then everything else, it was just different opinions. So I watched it a second time and really grew to appreciate it a lot more than either of the first two viewings. So that discussion really added to the enjoyment for me, which is why we were talking earlier, don't tell me anything else about the next movie coming up. I don't want to know anything. I just want the pure experience. And also 12 Angry Men blew me away. I did not expect to love it that much. Yeah. I didn't expect to love Night at the Opera as much as I did. I wouldn't rank it in my top five of the ones we've seen so far, but pretty high after that because
it's good.
I mean, I didn't expect a whole lot from the Marx Brothers. It was really funny. It was really funny through
bite
the lens.
Your tongue.
What?
Didn't expect much from the Marx Brothers. Just...
I'm not into slapstick comedy. I'm not the only woman to not like the Three Stooges, and not having watched an entire Marx Brothers movie before, I knew that there were going to be, Groucho Marx puns. I knew there was going to be a lot of slapstick comedy. I didn't expect it to be as clever as it was. I just didn't expect to enjoy it as much as I did. I really didn't have a whole lot of expectation for it. And I really did enjoy it.
Yeah, me too. I hadn't seen it before. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
Was it your first? It was your first Marx Brothers movie too?
I don't think so. Well, yeah, because I believe I've seen Duck Soup in the past, but it had been so long that I don't remember it that well.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see Duck Soup because it's number 60.
Mm-hmm.
So we've actually got Duck Soup coming up, which is people keep saying how that's their best movie.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that.
Peachy agrees. That's all I need to know. What movie were you most, and I think I know the answer to this, just because we've talked about it a lot, of the movies that we've watched so far, which one were you, like, what's the one that you've put at the bottom of your list? Like, what's the least favorite of those? The French Connection.
Really? Yes.
Oh.
We were both very disappointed. We had really high expectations, and it was, we kept waiting for the big chase. The famous car chase, and we didn't realize we'd already seen it. We'd already passed that point.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I mean, which it was a great car scene? What did you just call it?
Car chase.
It's like after midnight, I'm burning out big time. It was great, but I didn't see it as like the best car chase ever.
Obviously, they've done a lot in the last 25 years or 35 years.
And we take that into account. It's like, okay, this movie was in whatever, 70, whatever, or, the special effects on Bringing Up Baby, which was in the 30s. Mm-hmm. You don't expect CGI and all that stuff. So we do take that into account. Obviously, there's stuff that they can do now just with the computer animation to it, but it still wasn't. Yeah. I didn't.
It's funny hearing people talk about it. It's funny hearing Mike and Christiana talk about it because they're so much the opposite of us.
Yeah.
Where they talk about loving the story and the plot and the depth of character or whatever. And to me, they were all cardboard cutouts. Yeah. They were total, really generic. He's the generic grumpy detective guy. And
to me, part of the reason is, not knowing going into it that it was based on a real drug ring.
Yeah.
And, that it was the first one that was really...
was no plot. I mean, there was, but it was very thin.
Yeah, it could have been like a mini or like a, TV movie rather than... it didn't do it for us. And it's always fascinating to me, which is, again, why I listen to their shows after I've seen the movie, is where they... veer off from our opinions. Mm-hmm. And like Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Yeah.
Gah.
Yeah, that's my second.
Severely.
Lowest rated.
Really dislike that. I would say I dislike that movie more than French Connection.
Mm.
I think that for me was the worst movie on the list. I probably would have enjoyed it more knowing that it was based on a true story, this real guy and blah, blah, blah. But even knowing that, I never want to see that movie again. ever. Don't ever make me watch that movie again. And the movie I was dreading the most, the movie that made us put off starting this project of watching the AFI Top 100, Ben-Hur.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed that far more than I enjoyed Yankee Doodle Dandy, and I really didn't enjoy Ben-Hur that much. It's just like, I get why it's a story of this American patriot and all that he did for future generations of patriots, and I respect all of that, but never make me watch that movie again. So then besides that, the only other thing I had on the movies list was the movie that we have to discuss, that we are all three obsessed with to a ridiculous level. We've seen
Which people are probably already sick of hearing us talk about, because we did it.
We did talk about it.
Yeah.
In a crazy fanatical fashion. Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
But it's timely.
But it's timely because
the DVD's coming.
In 2 days. Right, basically immediately after Patrick gets back to his house, it will be arriving on our doorstep.
Amazon will be knocking It'll on his door.
It'll be here at 10 a.m. The Amazon man will be delivering Scott Pilgrim, and PG will have just been home for...
Actually, you know, we'll have to look check this out, because I got an email from Amazon saying that the Blu-ray has been delayed for Scott Pilgrim.
Bite your tongue.
Because it said that it won't be arriving till Friday or Saturday or something.
Right.
So, I didn't look into it more, but
that's bad because we have arranged a viewing party for my family that hasn't seen it Friday night. Oh, we may have to postpone, which
is going
to be.
As it comes by Friday, it'll be okay.
Yeah. It's tricky.
And we could
timing.
Always go buy the DVD.
Yeah, we could.
And the pinch.
The non-Blu-ray.
If we had to not disappoint people, we could buy the DVD to show.
If we had to.
We could.
I know you're already taking a hit because you're not going to be seeing it on a 50-foot screen.
With Dolby Surround.
With 20 speakers in the room.
I'm not happy about this. I told you I wanted our own freaking theater. And all we have to watch it on is a 65-inch HD. But yes, we are
on. First world problems.
Yeah, first world problems. Yeah, but we saw it 3 times. How many times did you end up seeing it in the theaters?
4.
Oh.
Well, I kept finding people that I needed to make mm-hmm. see it yeah. that wouldn't go on and see it on their own. So, yeah.
The third time we saw it, we actually went with our oldest, Naughty Bear, and we mm-hmm. had all three already seen it, but we just wanted to see it again. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. We are the right age for that movie. Even though it's mostly 18, teenage, you
but
know.
But the video game our age.
Yeah, the 8-bit references. The music is very 80s, 90s.
Right.
You know. It's, yeah.
And we had not... Well, I didn't expect to like it. We've already said that. We didn't expect to like it as much as we did.
No, but that's actually, my reading, the only thing I have been reading the last month or two has been comics, because I've been reading Scott Pilgrim, those graphic novels, and then read, started The Walking Dead. So getting my reading in, just not that. But yeah, I mean, the Scott Pilgrim graphic novels are well worth the read as well, so.
And I got those for my birthday.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
And so I've got, that's on my reading stack, is the Scott Pilgrim books, the first Penny Arcade book, which was a gift from Command Line mm-hmm. and his wife. So I have my stack of graphic novel reading to do. But what is your thought? Because we were having a conversation with Thomas at dinner a couple weeks ago, and he hadn't seen it yet. And was, obviously was going to have to wait for it to come out on DVD at that point. But he was reading through the graphic novels and was not really interested in it because he found Scott Pilgrim to be so unlikable. He didn't think he was. And I was so stunned at that statement that I kind of froze. But the word that I should have said to him was redemption. You know, he redeems himself by the end of the story.
Yeah.
And
he definitely is much more of a loser in the graphic novels, and they play up where one of the big realizations in the movie is that he hasn't treated people as nicely as he thought he had,
right?
That
he had defined in his own mind,
right? And they really expand on that in the comic books, because of course you got 6 full graphic novels to go through, and which represented I don't know how many comic issues, but his own reality of how he fought all his relationships were, which was much more in detail and many more than was in the movie. I mean, it made him look pretty bad at times, but the whole thing was, he realizes what he's done and grew as a person. So, but
leveled up.
Yeah, he leveled up. So,
Yeah. So that was something I'd wish I'd said to Thomas. And not having read the graphic novels, not knowing how bad it got, you know, couldn't mm-hmm. really speak to that as far as how much it he's actually redeemed himself from how he was in the graphic novels. But I think we'll force a viewing on him, whether he likes it or not. We'll lure him in with something else
mm-hmm.
and then do a switch on him, make him watch it.
Oh, he has to.
He has to.
He'll love it. He just doesn't know it yet.
Yes. And we will love him anyways, even if he doesn't like it as much as we do.
It could happen.
Tell him I won't, though. That's what I did. I took my best friend that lives in Charlotte. I took him, and the movie's about to start. I just leaned over and said, if you don't like this movie, I'm never speaking to you again. And you know, at the end of the movie, he's like, don't worry, we're still friends.
Or at least that's what he told you. He's going around town.
He loved it.
So any other movies that are worth discussing besides Scott Pilgrim?
I did see two movies, like one being The Social Network, which was really, really good. You wouldn't think a movie about the creation of Facebook would be.
It's a great review.
A great movie. I mean, if you like Aaron Sorkin at all, who did Studio 60, West Wing.
That's the only thing that makes me
want to watch President. It. I mean, he's a masterful writer of dialogue, and that comes through in this, just like any other thing he's done.
Sports
Night. The biggest Sports Night. I mean, go ahead.
Well, the biggest gripe I've heard about the movie is the actual portrayal of women is horrible. Every woman is just a ditz or a slut, or that's it. There are no redeemable women. There's no smart women. There's no.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely did not. I mean, they were pulling characters or pulling people out of his story, and they didn't, I guess, choose to focus on any that had. Many redeeming qualities or it depends.
That's one of the things that you kind of have to remember is that you can't always insert as much as it pisses me off to see those movies where you've got those kinds of women and no strong female good woman represented. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's that perspective. Maybe he doesn't feel like he's ever met a woman of quality. You know what I mean? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a fictionalized telling of the creation of Facebook. For instance, and I haven't seen the movie, but from what everybody's saying, the kind of focus of the movie or like his motivation for creating Facebook is to meet girls and get laid.
Mm.
In truth, he had a steady girlfriend through the entire time. He did not create Facebook to meet women.
That makes it very interesting.
So there is a prominent woman in his life.
Is he still with her?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Maybe he doesn't like her very much. No, I don't know.
No, they did choose to not include her for storytelling purposes.
Right.
But it was true that he created not Facebook, but there was a startup, which was just at Harvard doing this thing where he would pull all the pictures off of the databases for the dorms. And he did this hot, sort of like a hot or not thing where you would compare the girls. And he did that as a response, or on the same night that his girlfriend at the time broke up with him. And he had done this blog post, which, you know, he was very mean to this woman. And so they decided in the movie to sort of focus on that girl as an impetus for him to do something creative. And it ended up turning into Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Over time. And so, but they would go back because, you know, whether it's true or not, not that he was pining for this woman and that was why he did Facebook, but like he wanted to see, he saw her in a restaurant later and they show it in the movie and she still wouldn't have anything to do with him. And he, you know, sort of questions why, you know, he did all this if it wasn't, you know, but yeah. So they left out the actual girlfriend that he had throughout. You know, much of this time, just because it really wouldn't have added anything to the story, and they wanted to focus on some of the crazy stuff that would go on, you know, in an internet startup, and all the money that came pouring into from certain people, and you know,
yeah. But even the people who made those criticisms said they still very much enjoyed the movie.
Yeah,
you know, those were the only criticisms they had, but that it was a very enjoyable, well-made movie and a lot of fun.
And Jesse Eisenberg, was in Zombieland, I mean, kid in Zombieland, he plays Mark Zuckerberg, does a great job. Justin Timberlake's incredible. He's only in the movie a very short time. Not very short, but two or three scenes, and he's very good. He's a really good actor. It's very, you know, sort of surprising to a lot of people, I'm sure, but he's really good.
I think it's a natural translation for a stage performer, a really quality stage performer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've seen him in a couple other movies. He's good.
Mm-hmm. Well, and he's been always good on Saturday Night Live, too.
True. <Yes. laughs> Step one.
And then the other movie I saw.
Cut a hole in the box. Yeah.
Cut a hole in the box. The other movie I saw was Easy A.
It had the Emma Stone chick.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The girl, another Zombieland connection. Yeah. She plays a girl that basically agrees, or because she's doesn't want to correct her friend and explain why she didn't want to spend time with her girlfriend, allows her to think that she had lost her virginity with this guy, because she made up, she didn't want to go camping with her friend. She said, I have a date with this guy in college, and it turns into this story. She doesn't want to stop the story because it's actually makes her popular, but then there's a Christian side of the you know, some students are ultra conservative, and they start giving her a hard time because, you know, everything's just spread like wildfire, the stories and stuff. And so she becomes popular, and so she's sort of embracing that, and then other kids start coming up to her and not wanting to have sex, but wanting her to say that she's had sex with them, mm-hmm. so they won't get picked on for being gay or being, you know, virgin or whatever. So, and it just goes from there, and it's sort of a spoof on the Scarlet Letter in places, mm-hmm. but it's very intelligent. You know, another one of those, you know, like a Ferris Bueller type thing, where obviously the kids that are talking, or her especially, you wouldn't talk like that in real life. You know, mm-hmm. like what's the movie? The one where the girl gets pregnant and
Juno.
Gina.
Oh, Ellen Page.
Like, you know, one of the complaints about that movie is that no girl would talk that way.
Right.
Or
a girl that young.
Blah, 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 blah. So that in that she...
Those sensibilities.
Yeah, Emma Stone in this movie, it's that type of character where she is smarter than all the other, you know, the way she talks and the way her relationship with her parents is probably the funniest thing in the movie. And they just talk to each other like they're, like it's an Aaron Sorkin, you know, had written the dialogue. And, but it's... You know, it's a throwback to some of those movies like Ferris Bueller and the John Cusack movies, where he's, you know, obviously a little more intelligent the way he talks and things in the movie. So it was a fun movie. So.
Yeah, from the trailer, I wanted to see it. It just had a lot of really great lines.
So let me ask you, as far as that aspect, would you say that you made the comment of that they wouldn't really talk like that in real life? So you think that Ferris Bueller also wouldn't talk like that in real life if he were a real kid? Or were you saying that those two female characters that you mentioned, Juno and the girl from Easy A?
I think, I mean, in a lot of movies and a lot of John Hughes movies and things, you know, it was a thing that he did where he wanted the kids to talk like adults, to have adult conversations and have, you know, so, and of course you're saying, well, maybe, you know, teenagers could throw out lines and come up with creative things like that once a day or something, you know,
right.
But having them all come out in an hour movie or, you know, that it becomes hyper real or what.
Always have just that perfect response.
Yeah. And, you know, it never bothered me because A, it's a movie.
Yeah.
It's,
you've got to suspend disbelief.
You're going to have, you know, so, but some people, I mean, critics talk about certain movies and it's like, oh, well, the characters are not real, or you know, they can't enjoy it because it takes them out of the moment. I mean, Ferris Bueller, you know, breaking the fourth wall and talking to talking to the camera, and some of that is in this movie as well. Easy A, she's doing a web series where she's explaining her story after the fact. So there's a lot of talking to the camera, and you know, so there's a lot of Ferris Bueller type references, and she even has a shower scene where she does the hair like Ferris Bueller from the movie. So,
well, and back to the show Weeds. Something I forgot about is one of the things that bugs me about the show is I find the kids in the show to be very unrealistic. That they say things and they act in certain ways that are not anything I've ever seen kids act and say. They talk very maturely for their ages for no apparent reason. And they just do things that are not real to me. I think whoever writes it doesn't have kids. at least doesn't have, you know, teenagers, and they're very unrealistic.
I mean, I think that there are kids like that out there. And the point of that they wouldn't make that many perfect responses, replies in an hour, maybe over one a day or whatever. But I find that gets said a lot more often about female characters. Like, if she's not talking like, you know, Britney Spears or some vacuous, you know, nymph, that, oh, well, that's not believable. It seems like when it's an intelligent character, like a Juno, because Juno's an intelligent character, and it sounds like this character in Easy A is, it seems like it's a lot easier to say, that's not how girls talk. I know some my best friend's daughters, homeschooled, did not grow up in that whole pop culture crap that I've seen so many girls, you know, ruined by right now with what's going on with reality TV and Lindsay Lohan and whatever, but they are very intelligent, very well-spoken girls. And so I guess that's why I get a little offended when I hear that, oh, well, you know, that's not how real girls. Well, there are girls like that. There are girls that are really intelligent and know more, that are older beyond their years and that sort of thing.
Like Juno, I don't see it as an intelligence thing. It's just that.
I'm like a maturity thing. I didn't find her to be unbelievable. That's just me. And it may be maybe it's me knowing girls more than what they might portray to boys. What you guys may have picked up on in interacting with teenage girls. I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't find them to be wholly inappropriate, but then I frequently don't agree with, you know.
Well, and part of it is she's not just, you know, any teenage girl. You know, she's stands out.
Right.
The way she's quirky in her style. And
right.
So, yeah, she isn't just any girl, but I don't know.
Well, and this is turning into a longer discussion than it needs to be, but I would say that those actually feed into why she stands out, or that she is more mature because she stands out, or because she's got those other differences, but yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
And then, any other movies that anything come to mind?
Mm-mm.
Just trying to think of what, besides Harry Potter, what the big sci-fi geek fantasy box office upcoming release was, but I'm not thinking. I mean, obviously Thor, but that's really far off. Green Lantern's still far off.
Yeah.
I can't. It's too late. I'm drawing.
Yeah, I don't know.
I did see the preview for Sucker Punch, which is a movie
coming out.
I don't really understand from the preview exactly what's going on, other than there's a young girl who gets sent to an asylum because she's, I guess, being preyed upon by a relative, and no one will believe that she's being, you know, whatever's happening. And in order to survive in the asylum, she withdraws into this fantasy world. And there's, you know, it's very, because of what she's been through, there's very, you know, all the women in this place are really strong, and they all fight and carry, and it's very, you know, Matrix-y when she's in this world. And it's, I mean, the preview looks kick ass, but we'll see.
Well, next I've got music, which of course starts with the Scott Pilgrim soundtrack. You'd swear to God I made this list up, you know, knowing that PG was going to be doing it with us, but I actually made this list up a couple weeks ago. So obviously, love the Scott Pilgrim soundtrack to pieces.
Yes.
Actually is the inspiration for me actually picking up a bass and learning part of one song, and we're actually switching to a different song because it's just too fast of a pace for tempo for me to be able to really learn it, going from Threshold to Garbage Truck, which it was a crapshoot between those two initially anyway, so, because I love them both. And I wanted to learn one that, you know, the Sex Bombs actually played, not one that was done by a different band.
Yeah.
And I don't
know. Sex Bomb! 1, 2, 3, 4.
And it was really tempting. Well, I need to learn the drum part, but we don't have drums, so it's guitar or bass. But yeah, I love that soundtrack. I've listened to it 1,000 times. I had to recently reboot my iPod and I lost the history. I can't remember why. I had to completely wipe my iTunes, you know, list and restart it. And so since I've done that, when I go on my morning runs now, instead of doing the Catch to 5K, I'm just playing my top 25.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the top are Scott Pilgrim. So that's obviously my favorite thing to listen to right now. But I've also got the Social Network soundtrack on here for obvious reasons.
Written by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
Yes.
Which is very cool, ambient background music for if you're doing something else, writing or...
I haven't heard any of it yet, so I definitely I need to grab that and put it on my...
That's, you know, just really subdued, mellow, synthy music.
Perfect for doing homework, too.
Mm-hmm.
So you liked
that? It's very similar. I don't know if you ever listened to any of Ghosts.
I listened to a little of it.
It's similar to Ghosts, which where it's, you know, instrumental and kind of more atmospheric.
And for those that don't know, Trent Reznor is the brain and heart and soul of Nine Inch Nails.
Nine Inch Nails. And Atticus Ross has been more involved with Nine Inch Nails, so it was he and Trent who did Ghosts.
Okay.
And so apparently something that happens a lot in Hollywood is you'll have either directors or editors who, when they're comping together their shots, you know, they're doing their dailies and things, usually the soundtrack hasn't been written yet or the score hasn't been written yet.
Right.
And they will pull in their own things and cut it behind stuff. And apparently that's a lot of times how some bands will end up with songs in the movies, that the editor will just throw something in that they have. They'll just pull a CD out of their car and they'll throw this in as they're working on a scene. And the director sees it so many times with that song that they'll go and sign the artist to put it in the soundtrack.
They just can't picture it with the
other. And so apparently they were listening to Ghosts and approached Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross and said, "We want you to do the soundtrack."
That's
so
cool.
So that makes sense that they're similar, you know, those two albums are similar.
Yeah. And you are, of course, a huge Trent Reznor.
Yes.
Fanboy. From so far back, it was before the term fanboy even existed.
True.
The next thing I have on the list is Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have been mildly obsessed recently.
Yeah, it's weird. Kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, I know where it came out of for me is one day I was cleaning and I just turned it on. It was a video. I can't remember what video channel it was. And they were doing an hour, how do you call it, a retrospective. I don't know what to call it, but just like an hour-long show where they just showed Lady Gaga videos and talked to her and little interview snippets and songs and stuff. And I did not have any idea how many songs of hers that I had heard before. I mean, I knew the Paparazzi song, but I didn't know that all these other ones were hers. And they were ones that I'd caught on the radio in the very small amount of time that I actually listened to the radio. I do listen to some because I like to know what the kids are listening to, what these young kids are listening to. But and it's a great way to find, I still love music and I'm still constantly finding new bands that I really enjoy. And so I'd heard a lot of it and it wasn't anything I went crazy for, but for some reason that video clip show really made me want it. And then Amazon had it for $5 one day, one of their 100 albums for $5 specials. And so I grabbed it. And I think that's around the same time that you got hooked with it, because I was playing it in the house when I was cooking or cleaning or whatever. So we're now kind of obsessed.
Yeah.
Not as much as before, but we were really highly into the song. And actually your band, Phil Rossi and the Awakening, you cover a Lady Gaga song.
Yes. Paparazzi.
I mean, Paparazzi. That's all you, when they play it, that's all you can think is Paparazzi instead of Paparazzi.
Yeah, and something that struck me about Lady Gaga, I don't remember, I don't think I've said it before on the show, but people have, for a long time, were comparing Britney Spears to Madonna.
Right.
And saying she is the next Madonna.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly she's kind of burned out already.
Yeah. Well, she might redeem herself. Who knows? But for now.
Mm-mm. Yeah. And I have really seen that Lady Gaga, I think, is more of a parallel to Madonna.
Yeah.
And seems to me that she can have the staying power to go through the decades and actually have a long career
Yeah.
being current with music, because she's already, you know, fashion-wise and stuff like that. She's kind of pushing, pulling people with her.
Which is what Madonna has been doing for the last 20
years. Where you're actually defining
years.
Things, not following things.
Right.
And something that really impressed me is there was not an interview with her, there was an interview with, I don't remember who it was, an older artist. And it was like, I don't know, like Bob Seger or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Who you think of as a singer, songwriter, you know. And saying that he was in the studio to record an album and he was stuck on a song or, you know, like the writing had to get X number of songs written in a certain period of time. And that the label was sending a songwriter over to work with him. It was her.
Mm-hmm. Before she
hit it big. Mm-hmm. So, and I had no idea. I thought that she was like most of the other pop singers where they just show up and sing whatever's put in front of them. Mm-hmm. But she's actually does write the songs and, mm-hmm. and everything. Yeah. Which I always, you know, really respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's been, damn.
There's a lot more going on there than just pretty pop bubblegum.
Yeah. And I feel the same way about Katy Perry. I've been obsessed with her for the last 3 or 4 months. And she does the bubblegum songs.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I'd heard several songs. But then I saw one of the MTV Unplugged things. And she did 6 or 7 songs. And she, you know, had recut most of the songs in a jazz type, you know, feel to them. And, and I just thought she had great voice and she does a lot of most of her songwriting. And so I think she's being pushed as, you know, with the poppy and the catchy and the dance and stuff. But I think she's got a lot more to her. I think she'll break free of that once she gets a little more power over, you know, because that was a lot of the interviews they were doing between the songs. She kept talking about, you know, enjoying doing doing it like this because it allows her to do what she wants and not.
It will be interesting to see how she develops because that's how, when Pink first started, Pink's first album, they were pushing her along that Britney Spears kind of route, and she finally was able to. She got enough success that she was able to say, okay, I'm done. I did it your way. Now I have enough power and control to do it my way. And she just totally turned. Listening to her first album compared to the newer albums, it's not like it's night and day.
Yeah.
But she definitely, she had a strong female image then, but she has been able to amplify that even more. And she's definitely shunned a lot of those stereotypes, which I just adore about her.
I've enjoyed Katy Perry as well. And as a side note, there's a... What?
You guys talk about enjoying Katy Perry, and it doesn't necessarily elude me her that music. She's very, very hot.
Her music.
That doesn't hurt.
No.
It's something I find...
It's just amusing to me.
Something I find funny or stumbled upon is a webpage that's dedicated to... Is it Katy Perry or is it Zooey Deschanel? And they actually have pictures. And sometimes you can't tell the difference.
Well, and they are very similar.
Depending on how far down the camera goes.
Facial structure. Yeah.
There's a clear difference there.
I don't know if we've talked about this on the show, but I wanted you to talk about the, I guess it was a website that you found that had the vocal tracks of these huge acts doing their hits. So talk about that because it's fascinating.
I have several books that are written by Bobby Ozinski, and they're written kind of like textbooks.
Right.
And they're all about audio engineering. So one is specifically about the recording process, and one is about mixing, and one is about mastering. And he has several others that he's written. And he recently, I don't know how long, as far as I know, it's recently started a blog that he's got one that ties in with another book. But anyways, he has his personal blog. And in the last year, he has started posting isolated tracks out of pretty famous recordings. So one of them that really turned our heads was the vocals for Hearts Barracuda. And it's just the vocals without the rest of the band. And how powerful it is.
I'm getting goosebumps right now just remembering it. It was amazing.
He's got a couple. There's like a couple Oasis songs and a couple of Red Hot Chili Peppers, where over the course of several days, he has released every part of the song. So you have just the drums, and then you have just the guitar, and then just the singer. And from an audio engineering standpoint, it fascinates me to actually. So I actually started, he posts them to YouTube, And I started ripping the audio out of the YouTube so I could throw it in one of my multi-track recording things
and play with
and
it.
Do my own mix.
Wow.
And so from an audio engineering standpoint, it's such a great learning tool to see.
I love my geek. So cool.
A great learning tool to see how they do these mixes.
And right.
It's interesting on how horrible certain things sound. There'll be a bass or a guitar, and on its own, it just sounds awful. But when you hear it in the context of the song, it works.
Right.
So that was one of the things that I found interesting. Another thing I found interesting is some of the, if you listen to newer artists versus some of the older artists, stuff from the 50s and the 60s, and how tight they were, because back in the age of tape, you had to get it perfect because it costs so much and all that sort of thing. But the other thing that struck me is how many mistakes are in some of the biggest, most famous hits of all time that he's posting. And you'll hear a guitar part or a bass part where they're flubbing notes, or a singer that's kind of off key, and the drummer where there's all this extra noise in it that's from the room that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
All these mistakes that you never really notice in the finished product, but it's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. I would say that that one track, the Barrack, which I love Heart, you know, I'm a chick. I really dug their music. She has, because your sister just saw them touring recently.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She has an amazing voice. So does her sister. But, you know, her voice is really the showcase.
Mm-hmm.
And Barracuda was never a song that I really liked. It was like my least favorite of their hits.
Mm.
And it just shows how beautiful that one track was. It's absolutely memorable and haunting.
Mm-hmm.
For a song that I never even really liked, her voice is so pure and powerful that you just kind of have to go, yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Barracuda, yes, ma'am. You know, it's just amazing.
Oh, and one of
And you've got to post a link to at least that one track in the show notes.
And one of the tracks is from a live performance by Britney Spears.
Oh, yeah. Those have already made the rounds on the internet, and they're just horrifying.
And they isolate her microphone. It's a train wreck.
Yeah.
It is a train wreck.
And obviously she lip syncs. We all know that she lip syncs. Many, many do. It's it's tone deaf and out of breath and huffing and puffing. It's just, see why she does the...
She is dancing.
She chooses to dance instead of to sing live, which is not an uncommon choice. Not a choice that I appreciate or respect.
There are other performers out there that sing and dance and actually sing.
Yeah.
Really?
There's a couple.
It's been known to happen.
Zooey Deschanel hops when she sings in the most adorable fashion.
It's true.
I don't think that's the same.
It's not, but it's way more awesome than any dancing that Britney Spears has ever done. It's the cutest thing ever.
Did Janet Jackson lip sync when she was doing all her dancing and stuff?
I don't know. I actually had tickets to see her perform on the 1814, I think was the name of the album that we were going to see, and ended up not being able to go. And I can't think of... I want to say that she sang live on the concert clips that I had seen of hers. But I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Any other music you guys want to talk about? Like, what's your favorite thing that you're listening to right now that we didn't already talk about? Patrick?
I really don't have anything. Scott Pilgrim and Katy Perry and Dave Matthews. That's about all that I listen to right now if I'm not listening to podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening to a number of independent stuff. There's a site called Jamendo, Jamendo. And what Jamendo does is it's integrated with the Ubuntu Linux music player called Rhythmbox. And it's a channel, so you click on Jamendo and it starts populating with all these artists and albums. And they're independent independent artists that... It's all Creative Commons, so you can listen to their music for free. And you can download the albums for free. And it actually has basically donate buttons. So as you're listening to them, it streams it. And so you can click on a song and then right-click and say download album. And then it has a donate button next to each one. So if you really, really like it, you can pass them some money.
Cool.
And they're mostly down-tempo trip-hop stuff.
Another thing that I'm listening a lot to right now is Gym Class Heroes. I just have a couple songs of theirs off of their various albums, and so I have fun listening to those. Those are also came up on my, you know, newer version of my top 25 playlist.
I should clarify what I've been listening to and targeting is the down-tempo trip-hop stuff. Jamendo has every genre on the planet.
Gotcha.
I mean, right now, it's nothing compared to iTunes, but right now they have, I want to say like 20,000 albums or artists or one of those.
Got ya. It's a lot.
So yeah, a wide range.
Actually, something that I've been listening to more than a lot of anything else is your band. You guys have had a lot of gigs in the last month, so I've been listening to that a lot more. But I think that's probably it for music for me. No, I did not buy the Glee soundtrack. No, I will not buy the Glee soundtrack.
All right, that's part two. As we said, this is being split into multiple pieces. There are three in total. The next part will be all about television, and you should see it drop in about a week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Into the Blender.
You can find information, comment on episodes, and subscribe to the podcast at intotheblender.com.
You can send us email to intotheblender@gmail.com.
Or you can leave us a voicemail at 657-464-4820.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons, non-commercial, no derivatives, 3.0 license.
You're free to make copies and share this podcast to your heart's content, just not modify or make money from it.
Theme music is provided by Sharif, found on podsafeaudio.com.
For more information about the artist, head to sharifmusic.com.
That's SHARIF music.com.